Christina Broderick, and I am so excited to be here today. I am the CEO and founder of Ignite EDU. I'm a licensed social worker, certified school social worker, and we're doing this series on how we can look at student mental health in different areas. And today we're focusing on student mental health in the home, and we have Courtney Mick here. Courtney, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, and then we can go ahead and get started.
Oh, goodness, I get to introduce myself. One of those things where you have to brag about yourself
a
little bit.
I know. It's like an interview. Tell me about yourself.
So let me tell you about Courtney, guys. Okay. So I, too, am a licensed social worker in the state of New Jersey, certified school social worker, founder and CEO of Courtney Chanel LLC, which is a mental health and wellness education platform for Black women and women of color. Mom of a rambunctious and super, super, I don't even know how to describe Aiden, but he's amazing. 3-year-old and, you know, daughter to two parents who just like to uphold so many different expectations of their adult child.
And, right.
Yeah. You know,
right. So and it's what's funny is, so Courtney and I have known each other for a bajillion years. We've worked together in 1.5 jobs, I guess you could say.
Ah, yes.
We share the same birthday. We are both from Jamaican families.
Yes. Master's program.
Master's program. Went to school together for our master's. Gosh. Yeah, we know we're very,
very alike. Overlapping. It's amazing.
And the reason why I wanted to have you here, because I know you do a lot of work with parents, especially like millennial parents.
Yes.
And you bring a certain lens being a mother, but then also being a social worker. Yes. So I thought it'd be great to have you be able to talk about mental health and what parents can do, what it looks like in the home, what it used to look like, what we can start doing, et cetera, et cetera. So to start, we have to kind of go back a little bit. So can you talk to us about what mental health looked like for you growing up?
It didn't exist. It wasn't a thing.
Common, yeah.
There was no conversation about it. Yeah. Mental health didn't become a thing until, I don't even know if I want to say college. I don't even know if I was talking about mental health in college like that. Undergrad, that is. I think the mental health conversations really started for me during the master's program. Mm-hmm. And that's when my parents started getting annoyed with me. We're not your patients. We're not your clients. Don't social work us. But what I've seen since I started the program is like an evolution within at least my immediate family.
Yeah.
In the people around me, because now conversations are becoming constant, especially while we're all in the house together, because now we're in the house together. And boy, has my mental health taken a toll.
Yeah.
So it's forced us to talk about things, and I hear my father is the Jamaican parent in my family, and it's become question of, what do you have to be depressed about, or what are you anxious about? There's nothing going on with you. And when I start breaking it down, or at least talking about it, he becomes more accepting. I don't know if he fully believes in mental health or anything like that, but he's never been the parent to judge, never been the person to, he seeks to understand a lot. I don't know if it's something that he fully understands, because he looks at it as any Jamaican parent would. And that's like, you just got to deal with whatever you're dealing with and move on from it. Yeah. I think one of the things that he said was, if I stop moving, then of course things are going to bother me. So I don't stop moving. And I'm like, I don't believe in that, Dad.
Yeah.
That becomes the conversation.
Yeah.
So growing up, it's been kind of that. It wasn't a conversation. They were taboo topics, as it was for any Black family, let alone Caribbean family or West Indian family, as I prefer to say. And then it just through adulthood has transitioned into, let's talk about it. If you really want to know what's going on with me, let's talk about it. And I think that's the other thing. We didn't really have conversations about how you're doing.
It was like homework, school, what's this grade? You need to go read a book.
Like, I remember, I think this is a memory. High school, I didn't care too much for high school, but I remember having issues with girls in high school. And I don't think I ever spoke to my mom about those things. So I get it when my students don't talk to their parents about stuff. It becomes a conversation of, well, they're not going to get it. It's not that they won't. It's just, suck it up. Was kind of the mindset. But my mom, I know she used to stand, if she knew that something was going on, she would step in.
Okay.
So
it's interesting, because it can be like, I always like give space to recognize that my, in terms of like mental health, right? Because I'm also from a Jamaican family, I do recognize it was different. So I'm from single mother, single parent household, three kids. And I remember therapy started for something that my brother would go to. And then my mom just started slowly like going. And then it became like the most important like appointment ever for her. Sometimes she worked in the city. And she would, like, come home, drop her bags on the porch. She wouldn't even open the door. Drop her bags on the porch so she can hop in her car and, like, go to her appointment. Like, it was so important for her. And it made sense, right? Like, she's trying so hard to support three kids, commuting, in, you know, back and forth from the city. So it was interesting. Like, I, at the time, I don't think I put that together of, like, oh, like, she's going because she's stressed out and, like, all of this stuff and how, you know, sacred this is for her. It was just kind of like, okay, she's going to like the therapist. It wasn't until I got older that I reflected and I was like, oh, I'm so, it just never was like, it wasn't a situation in our house where it was like, oh, this is a huge stigma, whatever. But we also didn't talk about it, right? Like we didn't talk about our issues. We didn't talk about challenges that we were going through. It was just kind of like, we were just each living these separate spaces, which was like weird. It was so interesting. I remember like thinking that when I was younger, I'm like, we just feel like we just live in the same space. We're not really
cohabitating.
Like, we're not like actually doing this. And I think you bring up a really good point in terms of like, as you get older, then how that relationship starts to shift, right? How do we start engaging in those conversations with our parents? So what was that like for you? And I'm assuming maybe that's kind of, and you can speak to this too, what led you to wanting to go into mental health, right? Like what brought you to this field?
Okay, so I'll start with the parts about how did the conversation start. I am huge on boundaries, but I'm huge on boundaries for a reason, because if you don't have them in place, then you're not going to be able to maintain your own mental health and emotional safety, right? So it got to the point where I was tired of explaining things over and over again. So I'm like, you know what? This is my boundary. I'm going to go through what I need to go through to be able to take care of myself. And sometimes that means that I'm not going to have conversations in the morning with my mom, or I'm not going to talk to my dad in the morning, and I'm going to listen to a podcast, or I'm going to listen to music. And that's kind of what started it. Our family was, and I still question this as I like reevaluate and reassess and maintain my own self-awareness, how healthy is it to have daily multiple daily conversations with your parents? Because I would talk to my parents in the morning, I would talk to them in the afternoon after work. They would know whether or not I had a good work day, whether I woke up on the wrong side of the bed or something like that. But it didn't leave space for me to have conversations with friends, develop romantic relationships, things like that. So as I started pulling away in that sense, and I'm laughing because I just saw this like meme on Instagram, or this thread on Instagram about West Indian parents and how the minute you try and pull back, why don't you love us anymore?
Yeah, I saw that one.
Because that's the response that I got from them. It's like they have such a tight hold and they don't want to let go. So as I started taking space for myself and creating space for myself, it became like this pushback from them. Like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
For my mental health. You don't have to deal with the things that I'm dealing with here on my own, raising my child on my own, not being a stay-at-home mom, actually being a working mom. And those have kind of been what the conversations look like. My dad got those concepts much earlier than my mom. I don't, I still don't feel like those dots are fully connecting. But it was very important for me to acknowledge that those are the things that I need, and those are conversations that I need to have, even if it's just with myself, to be able to take advantage of therapy. And when Courtney said, I actually have an appointment with my therapist today, why are you going to therapy? My dad's question. Why are you going to therapy? My mom. So it's like, I'm going to therapy because I need it. Like, I'm stressed out. I need to talk to someone, and I need to talk to somebody who's not going to try and fix it. I don't need you to fix it. Don't need you to fix it. I need to process some difficult, really hard emotions, things that are stressing me out, things that are, like, causing me to be out of balance. And I need you to be okay with that.
Like,
be okay with it. Or don't. Because guess what? I'm going anyway.
Be okay. Be not okay. Either way, I'm doing this, what I need to do for myself.
So that's where it started. Or that's where those conversations started. And that was after I had Aiden. didn't have postpartum depression as much as I had postpartum anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And that anxiety came from my new role. Yeah. I was so used to, when I was pregnant, oh my gosh. So we were finishing our program.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Aiden. We were in our program finishing an internship. I was working a part-time job and my full-time job. So I technically had three jobs.
Right.
Plus doing coursework for our MSW program. And then went from having those three things and more to nothing because I'm now on maternity leave.
Yeah.
It made me, I remember, and this is how I knew it was at least baby blues. I remember breaking down because I didn't have anything in my schedule. I am like super Virgo when it comes to that. And I'm like, I have nothing to do. I just have a baby to take care of. What am I supposed to do? Why don't I have any meetings? Why don't I have any papers due? Why don't I have anybody to see? Like, what's going on? So that was what that transition looked like for me. Somebody who was always on the go, always doing something, always having something planned to now looking at this baby sleep. House is already clean. What am I supposed to do now?
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of birthed the Mommy Moves blog and trying to provide those resources. And I don't, that's where my conversation, now that I'm like thinking through it, that's where the conversation started. I'm like walking through what new motherhood looked like.
Yeah.
At the time, podcasts were just getting started. So there weren't many resources for Black moms, let alone millennial Black moms who were coming up and then becoming a single parent and all of those things. Nobody to really talk through that with. So parents from older generations try to get it and they try to be supportive, but we still have those different stigmas that are present. It's that superwoman syndrome, the strong Black woman schema that exists that my mom was trying to impress on me in my motherhood. Didn't acknowledge the stress that I was experiencing.
Yeah, plus I think it's still that, like, what happens in the house stays in this house, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you mean you're going to go talk to somebody? What do you mean? Yeah. Like, we're here. We can figure this out as a family, right? And it's like, nah, because y'all are part of the problem. You know?
And if I tell you, then if I'm telling you, I'm telling Granny because Granny's always going to know.
Right. And then when Granny knows.
Aunt Monica knows, Natalie, Jenny, everybody knows. So,
exactly.
I'm going to go talk to my therapist and I know it's going to stay with her and that's
it. Right, right. That's staying in that space.
Yes.
And do you now see that? So you've been working with students and, and kids for a while. So when, of course, and then in that inevitably is like working with their parents. So what does that look like in terms of the work that you're doing, in terms of like the challenges that you're seeing? What are the things that are growing? Are you noticing any shifts or changes in like those dynamics and those conversations when it comes to working with students and their families? Because I know for me, like I remember having conversations with a parent in particular who was fine with her daughter getting services and getting support. And the minute I mentioned like her being involved, it was like, no, what do you mean?
I don't need therapy.
and then it also was like, I'm cool with her having it now, but as she gets older, she needs to get over this. She needs to grow out of this and get over this. So then for me, it was like, time out. We're no longer having a conversation about services. We're kind of having a conversation about mental health, right? We're now working on just some knowledge and understanding about what mental health is. We'll revisit the services thing later, but we need to take a step back so that you can also better understand it for your family, for yourself, and for your child. Yeah. So what are some things that you're like recognizing and seeing?
Exactly what you explained, right? So at the high school level, it's very easy to not have to involve the parent. Really just work with the student on some of the peer issues that they're having or how they're feeling about college readiness or how they're feeling about goals or not feeling as though they have a purpose in life. Nothing more so the teenage, the growing pains as we would, parents call them that. You're just going through growing pains. I can't believe I said that. So I like to call my kids eager skeptics, right? They're eager to learn about mental health. They're eager to work on their mental health. But they're skeptical when you introduce the idea of maybe you should begin to talk to your parents about how you're feeling and how they're making you feel.
Yeah.
No, Miss Make. They're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So some of their parents are close to our age, or at least feel as though they are, and or maybe just a few years older than us.
Yeah.
So it becomes a conversation with a peer. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the part that I like, because now I'm educating you on what's going on. Well, not even. I'm helping your child tell you what's going on.
Right.
So facilitating the conversation in the sense like, tell your mom how you've been feeling. Tell your dad how you've been feeling. Tell your parents what went on at this age.
Yeah.
Those type of things. And you see like this huge epiphany and where everything just starts to connect. And things start changing. So then the parents are more open. I have some parents who are already in therapy and they're like, nope, tell me what she needs. Let's go.
Right.
Or they're like, no, we're going to go, but on our own time. And then sometimes that never happens.
Yeah.
So the hardest, it's not the hardest part of the job, but one thing that is really important to the job is making sure that we aren't being judgmental at any given point.
Yeah.
Because just like me, I have to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go to work. So sometimes it doesn't feel as though they can make time for something like that.
Yeah.
Some parents aren't fortunate enough to just do 9 to 5
or
an 8-hour shift. They have to work 14 hours a day, a double or something to sustain their household and provide for their kids and give them what they want, not only just what they need. So
I think it's also scary, right? You
think
you want to be this great parent, you think you're doing all the things right, and then you're hearing that like your child is going through something that you can't relate to, you've never been through. So while some it's kind of like that fight or flight, right? So some are like, you know, nah, da, 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 da. And some are like, oh, I'm gonna, nope, we're gonna revert and go back to our private home and like pretend like this isn't happening. But some are like, nah, we got services, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, right? So, and that goes back to what you're saying in terms of you can't really judge because everyone is at their own different spot, right?
Exactly.
And I notice a big difference. And one thing we're gonna be talking about in the series is like mental health with boys.
Yeah.
And it's so different, even from like such a young age, about how the conversation about mental health, the willingness to get support for mental health is just so different when it comes to boys and girls and how that is perpetuated within the home sometimes, right? So what are some things that you recognize within that space?
Ooh. Okay, so talk about my 3-year-old, for example. I am very much aware of the things that I see in my kids and making sure that I address them now with my 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Or at least start to have different conversations because you can see where it develops. Like when you, for me, I was working prior to the school in on the child and adolescent crisis unit in Bergen County.
Mm-hmm.
And it was started with ages 5 to 17.
Yeah.
That's the age that we served on that unit, so you could see how mental health develops so early.
Yeah.
And even before that, like we should definitely be serving kids. I don't want any child to be on an inpatient unit.
Yeah.
But I got to see the whole gambit.
Yeah.
From everything with the introduction of drugs and different things that you see on TV. So I had become hyper conscious of the different things that can impact mental health and dreams and how dreams can become reality and manifest into mental health issues and things like that. Nonetheless, it starts with tantrums.
What do you mean? I don't have a kid, so school me. How does it start with tantrums?
It
what do you mean?
With tantrums. Tantrums are an expression of emotion.
Right.
So you don't have the words for something, so you're gonna have tantrums.
Yeah.
Even it happens with adults too. Like
you
can't get your words together and you just feel tense all over.
Yeah.
So you're having a damn tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
And what with Aiden, it becomes a, it looks like you're feeling something right now. I don't know what's going on. Get it out. But we're going to find the words to describe that.
Yeah.
So that's what those conversations look like with a 3-year-old. I say it just like that. Looks like you need a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to throw that.
Yeah.
That's not how we handle that.
Mm-hmm.
You can ball up your fists. You need to release them after you do, because then you don't want them to develop like maladaptive coping skills and things like that. But we're going to sit and we're going to talk and we're going to actually use your words. But mommy's going to teach you the words. And that was the piece that is missing from a lot of boys. Boys aren't supposed to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Boys aren't supposed to. Guess what? You can cry.
Mm-hmm.
it hurts. You're upset. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Your feelings are hurt. No, I'm not making him soft. I'm actually teaching him how to use his words and right. express emotion. Right. And that's how you get rid of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. Are we uncovering some stuff here?
I know.
So those are the things that I'm like, freshman year. So I started with my boys at my school when they entered as freshmen. Yeah. And that was a lot of the work that I was doing. Emotional expression and an expansion of the emotional yeah. vocabulary, because sometimes you don't have the word to describe what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And there's nothing better than putting this feelings chart of over 100 or 50 even feelings and seeing the word there and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And what does that look like for you? So... Yeah.
I think it's a big, like the healthy expression, because we don't want it to, you to suppress emotions, right? We don't want mm-hmm. you to suppress feelings. And I think that happens more often when it comes to boys is like, well, take it out mm-hmm. with, you know, boxing, take it out with like all these more aggressive things. But you're like, how can we just normalize feeling the feelings?
Yeah.
Just feel them, feel the feels, you know? Yeah. And in terms of even the vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. It's more than just I'm happy, sad, angry, frustrated.
Yep.
There's so many other feelings.
I'm disappointed. Yeah. I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed.
Yeah.
So many things. And I like that anger iceberg image, because it's like, boom, I'm angry. No, you're feeling all of these things that are underneath.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so, what can parents then start doing to make this shift? Right? Whether it's a boy, a girl, just in general. What mm-hmm. can parents, guardians start doing to like start making this like healthier shift to be more attentive to the mental health needs of their kids?
Pay attention and listen. Mm. And I'm saying that for myself too, right? Because I think it was 2 days ago, I had a Zoom meeting and Aiden was supposed to get in the pool. Mm. He's like, Mommy, can you come outside with me so I could get in the pool? Sure, you're gonna get in the pool by yourself. He does it all the time. I sit outside. He gets in the pool by himself.
Mm-hmm.
We've done it plenty of times. He didn't want to get in the pool by himself. And he saw that I was on a meeting. So then he wanted attention.
Mm.
So I'm like, Aiden, you can't do this right now. I need you to sit down. Aiden, you can't do this right now. I need you to sit down. Actually put him in the seat. Sit down, Aiden. And then he threw something. Aiden, go in the house. Go upstairs to your Gma. Mm-hmm. So I come inside after it's done. He goes inside to his Gma. I come inside after I'm done with the Zoom meeting. Mommy, you were so mean to me.
Mm.
Heartbreaking,
mm-hmm.
but you want to have a conversation. So, boom. Right. My 3-year-old started a conversation with me about his feelings. Yeah. I hurt his feelings. And it's like, I'm sorry, I hurt your feelings. Right. And that's the other thing. Parents need to apologize. Mm-hmm. That's a thing that is, ooh. Yes. And it's not even just our parents. Like, parents.
Yeah.
All parents. We need to be able to apologize to our kids. Because that's how you teach them empathy. That's mm-hmm. how you teach them.
Teach accountability.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you did something wrong. You hurt somebody's feelings. Right. You apologize for it and you fix it.
Right.
Or ask what you can do. So I had a conversation with my 3-year-old as if he was 15, telling me that I hurt his feelings. I was so mean to him.
Mm-hmm.
I told him what I needed. He told me what he needed, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
So that's where it starts, having a conversation, slowing down.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the pandemic allowed for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But... because we didn't have anything else to do at the beginning of it. So.
Yeah. But it's hard, right? I think it's hard. People are definitely still stuck in this, like, power differential of, like, I'm the parent and you're the kid. Know your place. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then how, over time, what that ends up happening is that you have kids that don't know how to express themselves.
Yeah.
You don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. You've tried all of these different methods.
Exactly.
Right? And they keep failing. But you're so unwilling to have the conversation.
Yes.
Right? You're so unwilling to say, it's not about this, like, power differential. It's about, like, mm-hmm. I just need to understand my child.
Exactly.
Right? And have those conversations, apologize if I need to, recognize my wrongs, and mm-hmm. then we can build and grow together. But it's hard, right? It's definitely hard for that. So what are some strategies then parents can do to start moving to that kind of mindset? Like, if someone's like, okay, cool, I get it, but like, how do I start? Like, what does this look like to start?
One thing I remember from my childhood is actually doing things together, okay. including eating dinner. My dad is a truck driver still, and throughout all of my childhood, all of me growing up. So he wasn't home during the week, but we would still, whoever was home, we would eat together as a family. When he got home, we would eat together as a family. So maybe you don't have time to sit and eat together, but you have to make time to do something. So whether you are cleaning the kitchen together, creating something to do something together. It creates the opportunity to have conversations, to get to know one another. I feel like that is the missing piece. Technology, although it provides opportunities for increased accessibility to everyone outside of your physical space, it creates a barrier to those who are in your physical space. You force yourself to disconnect when you're in your phone, when you're on your computer, on your iPad. So actually take the time to do something together and create, whether you have a 1-year-old or an 18-year-old, it doesn't matter. The best thing that my sister did, her best idea yet, was having a pizza night where we actually, so my sister is a pastry chef, and we all made pizza together. My pizza was so good. I made a margarita one, but Aiden actually made like a pepperoni pizza or something like that, and was delicious too, but he was so proud of it. So to have us all around the table creating pizza from kneading our dough and everything to actually saucing them and putting the toppings on, it provided us with the opportunity to disconnect from technology but also be together in a space with one another. And so when I think of teenage boys or teens in general, they're either on TikTok or they're playing video games. They're in their rooms. Their rooms are their own space. Some of them have, like, these rooms that look like suites with these huge TVs. And I'm no, I wouldn't leave this space either. I see them on video, and I'm like, you guys are playing the game. Not even looking. Eye contact. Person talking to you on the phone.
I think they're being slick sometimes, and it's like, I can tell you're not listening.
You're looking up at
them. Sometimes you can hear the controller, like, smacking.
Games off now.
It's so funny. Thanks. I'm like, y'all are not that slick. No, he tried it.
We're having a conversation. And I think we all, parents, teens, kids, are just too busy to slow down long enough to connect with one another. So a hands-on activity will slow you down long enough to be able to do that. Or watch TV together. See something on TV. Not the news. It's depressing. Watch something else.
Yeah.
And have conversations about what are going on in that show. There's different shows that you could just watch and talk about because they're bringing up topics that are relevant. And, or have a reading time. I don't know. I feel like I'm talking about things that are ancient. But listen to a podcast. I don't know. Do something together. I think
what you're saying is, though, it's all about being intentional, right? Yes. Is that you're planning and you're carving out time to do something together, right? And sometimes that can change, right? I had a family who, the daughter liked doing one thing, the son liked doing another thing, so she was kind of stuck. I'm like, well, we talk about it and come to a compromise. Right now we're going to work on this. Next time we can do this, and et cetera, et cetera. And then starting that early, right? It's very hard to start that routine and system when they're like 16, 17, you know what I mean? Not impossible, but definitely harder. So I think as you're kind of saying, starting that with like when they're younger and kind of building that into the fabrics of your family's foundation can make so much of a bigger stride. And then that's how you start those conversations, right? You provide that space and allow that space more than just like, oh, how was your day? Good. How was your day? Good, right? It's like, well, what was good? Tell me something that was good. Tell me something that was challenging for you, right? And like asking those intentional questions, because that's how you can start like figuring out patterns and start noticing things that are happening with your kids.
There's that reminds me of, so I like the dollar spot section in Target. It's a trap. And in the dollar spot section, I have these, or I found these conversation cards that you could begin at 3 years old. And if your child has language earlier, by all means do so. Or they develop language earlier, but if they have the conversational words, do it earlier. And in it, it had different prompts. Who was nice to you today? Who was mean to you today? Those will elicit the things that you're really looking for, because sometimes you don't know what to ask. And even so, there was something, I think it was parents, I'm going to have to scroll through my messenger, but there's something on Facebook that allows you to also look similar prompts on things you can ask your child based on their age, which mm-hmm. I thought was awesome. Since we're so tech savvy now, I call this generation coming up now Gen Tech because you have 2-year-olds having iPads, 1-year-olds having iPads and things like that.
Yeah.
Shout out to all you parents who are in favor of screen time. I'm not, but I use it. Yeah. So no judgment. No judgment. Shout out to y'all. Tailor those tantrums when they happen.
Yeah.
But the reason why Aiden doesn't have tantrums when his iPad dies or his Fire tablet dies is because I didn't introduce it so early. Mm-hmm. And when I did introduce it, there were limits.
Yeah.
There's always limits. Yeah. But that helps with regulation too.
Yeah.
Boundaries, limit setting, things like that.
Yeah.
But back to what I was saying, what questions are you asking? Don't ask yes or no questions. Mm-hmm. Ask, show interest.
Right.
What's your favorite class? Different things like that. And I feel like because we are so busy, and I know sometimes parents aren't or can't be as involved as they would like to, you kind of miss out on what your kids are interested in. So I made it my business, and I think his child care center was a little, not annoyed. I'm sure they appreciate it, but I would always, how was he today? Don't tell me he was good or he was Aiden. I know he's Aiden. What did he do? Was he nice today? Did he hit anybody today? Because, yes, my child was hitting a kid in class. But guess what? I also found out that that kid was hitting him first. Right. Y'all just caught Aiden after.
Right.
So,
the conversations.
Be involved.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to be on the other end, right? So when you're doing those questions, also answer them as an adult. Mm-hmm. Like, let your kids start to see, like, things that you go through, right? Exactly. What are some things that you enjoy? What are some things that are hard for you?
Exactly.
Right? And that way, they also kind of normalize that's not like, it's only, you know, you can't get into my life. It's only about you. It's like, no, like, we're learning about each other, even as I am the parent. Like, this was, you know, I had a really hard meeting today. I'm not really sure if I did well. I was actually really nervous when I went into it. So cross your fingers, everybody, that, you know, I got a good outcome, right? That way they can see that, like, everybody gets nervous. Everybody, like, has these normalized feelings and experiences that it's not just something that is only meant for, like, kids, and they just grow out of it as you get older, right? No, we all are still, like challenging and battling different things in our life. So I think that's also, like, something that I think would be very helpful for people to start doing is, you know, showing your kids that you're not perfect.
You're human.
You're not perfect. People. Yeah. So any final, like, thoughts, suggestions for parents that may be listening to kind of like summarize, wrap it up?
You know what just popped into my head? It's okay to cry in front of your kid. It is. And the reason why that popped into my head is I don't know if I ever saw my mom cry until like recently.
Yeah.
It's okay to cry in front of them because you want them to know it's okay to cry.
Yeah.
But you have to then believe that for yourself too.
Right.
So it's okay to cry in front of your kid because then you're teaching them, oh, mommy's sad.
Mm-hmm.
So if I yawned one day and, of course, tears came in my, mommy, why are you so sad? Mommy just yawned. She's not sad today.
But check back tomorrow. Yes. Maybe a different story.
Yes. So you are your child's first teacher. Yeah. So take advantage of that. Yeah. You don't want somebody else to shake them.
Right. Right.
My biggest fear is I'm going to mess my kid up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mess them up emotionally. I'm going to... It's imposter syndrome in parenthood, mom guilt, all of those things wrapped into one. I'm not going to mess Aiden up. He's fine. But knowing that and taking advantage of the opportunity that you have to really connect with your kids and create them in your image.
Yeah.
Don't miss out on those things.
Yeah. Love it.
Ugh.
Love it.
Parenthood.
I will join the club someday.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's soon, further, whatever. It's not soon. I know it's not soon. I can guarantee you that one. But essentially.
Yes.
But I want to give you space to brag on your business, talk to us about the work that you do, the spaces that you create for women, how people can connect with you, engage with you, all of that good stuff. As I'm you know, your walking, marketing, billboard.
Yes, I love it. So, as you can see, Chrissy is wearing I Am Not Superwoman apparel. I have on a button here. But what I will say is, so I am not super, so many things. Mm-hmm. I am not superwoman started really based off of the conversations that we had. Yeah. I had a really hard time Mother's Day last year. Mm-hmm. Really hard time Mother's Day last year and initiated my business around motherhood, mm-hmm. surrounding motherhood, and felt like I needed to disconnect from that because I didn't feel like I was being a good mom. I didn't feel like I was in the place where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Co-parenting was stressing me out mm-hmm. in that moment, and I needed to focus on Courtney mm-hmm. and the woman, because everybody was like, you're doing amazing, you're doing great things, but they didn't know what was going on under the surface. Yeah. They didn't know what was stressing me. They didn't yeah. know the impact that the event that I had put on in May, my Mother's Day event, had taken on my mental health, on me financially. Yeah. It just wholly impacted my wellness. So I created I Am Not Superwoman because I felt like people kept telling me, Courtney, you're a superwoman. You're doing amazing things. You're so strong.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. I'm a person yeah. and I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
And what drove me insane was I was actually telling people I was stressed. I was mm-hmm. telling people, no, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. I'm yelling. I'm struggling.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. Great. Now I'm yeah. putting on a shirt. I'm right. not Superwoman. Now stop calling me that.
Yeah.
And it became a conversation starter. Mm-hmm. And then it became a workshop and an event. And COVID kind of knocked me off my feet. And I'm tired of doing virtual things. That's why I didn't bring I Am Not Superwoman virtual.
Yeah.
But whenever we are allowed to be in person again, I will bring it back.
Yeah.
But I Am Not Superwoman was birthed because I wanted to empower and educate millennial Black women and women of color to be able to say, I'm not Superwoman. I have feelings. I'm human. I have these things going on, and yeah. it's okay. I need to be able to create space for myself, and I need you to understand that it's okay for me to have yeah. that space for myself. I don't have to do all of the things. And it's based in the premise of the strong Black woman schema and really debunking that.
Yeah.
Which, when you do the research on the strong Black woman schema, really dates back to slavery mm-hmm. and how we just had to take everything and mm-hmm. do everything and yeah. be any and every and all things. So that's like one piece of Courtney Chanel under the umbrella. Then we have Breaking Ground, which is something I created in something. It is a space. A space I created in response to COVID and wanting to bring about a sense of connectedness, and that's Breaking Ground, the coffee break, and it was to break up the day.
Yeah.
We on Zoom zombies,
yeah.
we became, and I wanted us to be able to connect and talk about mental health, mm-hmm. talk about wellness, and assist each other in navigating all of the changes that are going on, and yeah. it's still going
yeah.
now.
It's such a good series.
Thank you.
I hate when I like book something for 1 o'clock and yes. then you check it. I'm like, oh man, I forgot.
Yes.
I gotta like be more intentional about yes. like blocking off my calendar for that
exactly,
space.
Exactly, yeah. because that time has really given us the wellness break that we need.
Yeah.
Sometimes I leave us with just the conversation that we had, which
yeah.
has been so rich and fruitful and providing different resources and opportunities, seeing things that other people are using. And then other times I'm giving tips in my areas of expertise
yeah.
to support mental health and wellness and things like that. So it's going to pivot again because work is starting and I don't know what my life is going to look like starting next week. So we will be moving into the sessions will shift to podcasts, but also they'll shift to evening time. So it'll hopefully be more accessible for
yeah.
a lot of women. It lives on YouTube, so you can definitely check out the recordings from the series on YouTube.
Great.
And now I'm streaming live on Facebook as well,
yeah.
which is pretty awesome. It's
yeah.
it's increasing the audience, and it's increasing the audience of older generations.
Yeah.
What other projects? So many projects. On the motherhood spectrum, I do some partnerships with different organizations, like Programs for Parents and trying to support maternal mental health, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to stay connected with Melanated Moms, of course,
mm-hmm.
because Jay from Melanated Moms is doing some transformative work.
Yeah.
So making sure that I am just normalizing mental health, which is...
Right.
Ooh, shameless plug, the newest, like, I like to say war cries, but I really want us to normalize mental health and
yeah.
have these real conversations. So even this week in Breaking Ground, I've been sharing my own mental health journey and how I've been dealing with depression and anxiety to be able to normalize that. I wanted to put an actual face there for people.
Yeah,
we talk about it. Yeah, I say I go to therapy, but I don't think people, it wasn't sticky for people. I don't think they got it. So I really painted a picture for them earlier this week and saying, this is what depression actually looks like. There's stuff all over my car. My bedroom looks crazy. My child is well taken care of. He's fine. He's clean. He's bathed. But guess what? I didn't want to get up this morning. I stayed in the bed all day. Or even today, it was a drag getting dressed. It was just it's a challenge. When you think about stress and the things that are going on in life, it's very hard to put it into words sometimes. Or to really paint a picture for people. And we talk about, you know, mental health empowerment and let's decrease the stigma and all of those things. But how? How if you don't really know what it looks like? Yeah, you know the symptoms, but how does this actually look for a real person? How does this look for somebody who also serves as a mental health professional, as a therapist who's supporting other people? Guess what? This therapist goes to therapy and she has no problem.
Same. I was saying that to someone talking about it. They're like, you do therapy, you go to therapy or you're a therapist? I was like, both. I'm a therapist and I go to therapy. And we talked about this yesterday, that like, even with you being so open and honest about like identifying the signs of your depression and anxiety, that helped me be like, wait, so it's definitely been my anxiety that's been like roaring its head, that I just have been like not even really trying to fathom and understand, but I've just been like, why have I felt so scatterbrained? Why can't I focus? Why can't I concentrate? Why do I procrastinate? Why do I just want to sit on the couch and not do anything? Like, why am I taking so long? And I was just like, so even with us, like, being the professionals, like, it's hard to do the work for yourself sometimes, you know?
So I'm going to keep talking about it, and that's how that, so any merchandise that I put out is because I want us to continue having conversations. I want people to ask. I want people to say, but you are a superwoman. Yeah, check the back of the shirt. But don't put those two words together. I'm not somebody who is subhuman. I'm 100% human, and I get tired. I need rest. Oh, my God. I know you have an acronym for rest, but I need rest. I need to be able to sleep. I need to stop, do away with the endless nights of staying up and grinding. Grind culture. Stop it.
My boyfriend's like, can you go to sleep?
Yes.
I'm like, I'm almost done. It's like 2 hours later, and I'm like, okay, now I'll go to sleep.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, normalized mental health is going to be the newest shirt, or is the newest shirt. You can find them on, just follow me at Court Chanel Says, because everything's there. And go on www.courtneychanel.com and subscribe to the website so you can just keep up with it all. It's too much to put in all these
Chanel Says, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook,
All of the things. Breaking Ground has its own Facebook group, which is great. You can search that. It's Breaking Ground with Courtney Chanel. But everything, of course, is accessible from the Court Chanel Says Facebook page. And then, of course, you can find everything on Instagram. Check out the stories, because I am sharing this week just about mental health and depression. And this is what depression looks like today. That's almost what it is.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to have had you here.
Thank you for having me.
And I knew that you bring such a great perspective when it comes to just the different realms of mental health. So again, I thank you, thank you, thank you for being on this
podcast. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Make sure to grab your copy of the Ultimate Guide to Student Mental Health workbook or enroll in our Student Mental Health online course.